So in the second part, we are going to see some code, okay, finally. So let's start looking at the service scripts. And we are going also to look at the available modules, because as you will see, when you create server-side scripts, you have to use Node.js and JavaScript. This doesn't mean that this is going to be forever. Maybe in the future, we are going to support other languages, at least on the server side, I mean. And we'll also look at how to configure user authentication with Windows Live, Facebook, Twitter, and Google. We'll analyze the user object and the integration with identity providers. We'll see some demos. And in the final part, we'll also look at how you can use scripts for doing things like data validation, duplicate detection, or authorizations, and so forth. And if we have time, we'll also look at briefly how to use the Windows Azure cross-platform command line tool to administer this stuff from your machine without using the management portal. So you can do things like you can back up your scripts from the command line tool. You can see the status of your mobile service. We'll see, okay? So on the server side, you can, as we have seen before, you can create scripts for all the operations that are associated with a table. And you can use a large number of objects and modules. Okay, so the objects that you can use in the scripts are, at the moment, these are the main ones that you can use. We'll see these in samples. So, for example, you can use APNS, stands for Apple Push Notification Service, can be used to send notifications to iOS applications. The console object can be used to write information and errors to the log. The GCM can be used to send push notification to the Google Cloud Messaging. MPNS to send notifications to Windows Phone 8 applications. Then you have the push object that is a more general object with four different properties, one each for APNS, GCM, and MPNS, and WNS. WNS is the object that you have to use to send notification to Windows Store apps. Then we'll look at other objects. So the query object, it's important to note that every script has the user argument and also the query argument. So especially in the read script that is invoked when you query for data, can be used to create queries to restrict the data that you want to retrieve. For example, in the to-do item application, if you want only retrieve the items associated with the current user, and the user ID is one of the columns of the table, you can just say a query. You will see in a sample where I can say I want just to retrieve the items of this user, the current user. The request is a very useful object. We'll use this quite extensively in our samples, because this can be used to send requests to services over the internet. So for example, as you will see, when a user authenticate with a specific identity provider, the only thing you have is the access token, okay, or the user ID, which is a number. What about if you want to retrieve, for example, the name of the user ID? The script, as we'll see, can invoke the identity provider, okay, to get the name of the user. And in order to do that, you can use the request object. Or you can use the request object if you want to, for example, invoke services exposed by your on-premises applications. For example, you have a CRM of a line of business application running on-premise that exposes a public endpoint, and you can use the request object to invoke that endpoint, and we'll see this in the third hour. Status codes is just an enum type with the main return calls, so success, error, whatever. Table. This is an object that you can use to make a specific operation on a specific table. And tables is just an object, is a sort of object that has a single method called getTables, and that returns a table. Okay, let me show you. Oh, it's running out of battery because this is not turned on. Today I have every kind of problems. Okay, here we go. So let's look at some samples, and we'll see these in real scripts, okay? But just for your convenience. So the console object, it's nothing to say. You can use it to write stuff to the log. MS SQL is probably more interesting. You can use these to make queries against a database, like select star from orders where country equal Russia, okay? And then you have the success function that is called in case of success. You can also have an error function that is invoked in case of error, okay? This is another object, the query object. As you can see, this is a very simple but effective sample. You have, this is the script object. You have, the read script. You have the query object as an argument. You don't want to retrieve all the items from the table, only the items of the current user. So if this is an authenticated user, the user ID contains the user ID. So I want just to retrieve the items from the table, which column user ID is equal to the user ID. Okay? So very straightforward. You can express, in this case, the filter using a JSON object. Okay? Again, the request object is passed to all scripts. So it's another object which is passed to all scripts. If you want to execute the default behavior for that operation, you just invoke the execute. Okay. So for example, in case of a read, the default behavior of the read is the request execute returns all data in the table. In case of an insert, it inserts the data. Okay. If instead you want to, let's say, override the default behavior, you can do whatever you want within the script and return a response using the respond method. For example, in the next hour, I'll show you a sample where instead of saving data to SQL Azure, I save data to a table storage. So in that case, I'm not invoking the request.execute because I don't want to save the data to the table. I instead call other code to save data to my storage table, and then at the end I invoke the respond to return success or an error. Okay. Tables. So this is, let's say that I want to enrich the incoming data and I want to read the address for the current user ID from another table. So I can use, as you can see, the tables object to get a specific table, so get table address. And then I'm using, once again, the where method to specify a filter. So I want to retrieve the address for the current user. And then I use the read method to read the actual data. And if I specify a success function, so a function to execute in case of success, and I say item address equal, if results is the length of results is more than zero, get the first one, otherwise unknown. And then I say, in any case, request.execute, because I'm inserting that item. So these are the modules that you can use in a script. So I don't know how many, probably you are a great Node.js developers, you know, I'm just a rookie. But so Node.js, okay, provides you with lots of modules. If you are a C# programmer, you have to think about modules like libraries, okay? No more than that. So these are the modules that you have at your disposal today. But tomorrow, okay, you will have more and more other modules that you can use in the scripts. So you can use the Azure that provides access to all the Azure functionalities. So for example, you can use this to access table storage, blob storage, queues, service bus, and so forth. And we'll look at this. Request again, is that it can be used to send HTTP requests to external web services. SendGrid is a module that integrates with a third party called SendGrid, okay, which is an independent vendor, and they provide emailing services. So basically, you can use this module to send emails from your scripts, like a confirmation email when a user completes the registration form on a mobile application. Util provides useful methods like, for example, format is date, is array, is error. XML to JS, if you want to convert XML to JavaScript, to JSON. JavaScript is JSON. In the opposite, JSON to XML, okay, converter. And other two interesting and useful modules are XML Builder. I will use this in a demo. It's just a convenient way to create XML documents. You can think about this like the DOM in C#. Like, you know, you create an XML document, or even better, using the X document, okay, for example. And SAS, same story. It's a convenient way to create XML. So let's see some samples. This is the request, and this is interesting because you can use this to invoke external services. As I said before, let's say that I want to query for my data on Twitter. So Twitter exposes an API, a REST service, that you can invoke to get data on accounts. So this is my account, BubblesBird, and I can just invoke this API to get a JSON object. Let me show you this using the browser, okay? So if I go here and I say, let me close this guy. Okay. What's going on?
Maybe you need to authenticate it with
No. This is a public API. Let me do this way. Here we go. Now, it was, for whatever reason, it was not refreshing. Okay. So, as you can see, you invoke this guy, this API with, for example, the screen name. You can also specify as an argument the user ID, and you get all the information. So, you can also do this just to give you an idea on Fiedler. So, if we go to the composer. Execute. What's the problem? I don't know now. Anyway, let me show you also, you can do the same thing also with Facebook, for example. So if you go in the developers area of Facebook, you can access the examples to call the so-called Graph API. Okay, so for example, you can do something like, as far as I remember, so if I go here and instead of B Taylor, I say my account, Observatory 1, here we go, you have. For example, my name, and you can also do more than that. As far as I remember, you can just specify the fields you are interested in. So fields equal name. So I just want the name. Here we go. Okay, so it's how you can retrieve this data from your script as we have seen in the slide, you can do this. Let me show you. This is a real mobile service. So that I did. So for example, if I go to data, to do item. Now, when we authenticate against the mobile service, you will see that this is the authentication, the user ID is, you see, it's just a numeric value, okay? So what about if I want to specify, let me show you, and if I want to save in the table the username, like in this case, Paolo Salvatore, okay? So basically in the script, what I'm doing is to invoke another function called getUsername. So as you can see here, I'm using the request object, okay? So the request object can be used to send requests to external services. As we'll see, when the user is authenticated, you can invoke this method called getIdentities to get the identities of that user. So the return object will have can have one of four parts. Can have the Microsoft identities.microsoft or .facebook.google or .twitter, depending on which identity provider was used to authenticate the user, okay? So basically, I'm creating the URL to invoke to get the username in a different way depending on which identity provider the user was authenticated against. So for example, if the user authenticated against Microsoft, I will invoke this API to get his name. In that case, I have to specify the access token. As we have seen for Facebook, I can specify the access token or just the name of the user. So in this case, since I don't have the name, I have the access token. Okay. In this case, I'm using the access token that I can get from the user object. If we scroll down, this is the request object, so I can just specify the URL and specify a function that is invoked that has, at the end of the call, that has three arguments, the error, the response, and the body. So in this case, I'm basically saying, if I get an error invoking Twitter, Facebook, or Microsoft account, log an error to the log. Otherwise, I take the body, and I call the JSON.parse because I want to transform the string into a JSON object. And at that point, I'm going to get the name. And interesting enough, all of the data providers, Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, and Google, in all those cases, the name of the user is called name. So I don't have to differentiate. I just say data.name. And I assign this to the username. So let's get back to the presentation. So this is SendGrid. SendGrid, you can integrate with Sending in two ways. You can go to the Windows Azure store, okay, and you can basically subscribe to use SendGrid from the Windows Azure store. So you can basically go to here. You go to scroll down. Let me see. The store is add-ons. So you go here. You say purchase add-ons, and you select SendGrid. Now I can't show you this because my subscription is not enabled to use store. Or you can just go on SendGrid. And you can just subscribe here directly on their site. Okay? Once you subscribe, this is my account. Okay? Once you subscribe, you can use SendGrid very easily. And I think you can send up to 200 emails for free every day. So it's you see, it's very the mechanism is very straightforward. You create use the SendGrid object, okay, this way, username and password, and then you have a send method where you specify in a JSON object to, from, subject, and text. So very, very, very easy. Let me show you. No, I'll show you a sample when we talk about schedule. Okay. Let's talk about client libraries. Okay. So first of all, the .NET framework team created a project called Portable Class Library, which is a sort of, which is indeed a subset of assemblies from multiple frameworks. So from the .NET framework, Silverlight, .NET for Windows Store Apps, and Windows Phone and Xbox, so that when you code against these libraries, this code is in effect portable from one platform to another, okay, without any kind of changes. So the mobile services team decided to go through the same road. So they built the new generation, let me say, of the client libraries, supports the portable class library model. So in a few words, this means that you can write the code once, for example, as you will see, for Windows Store apps and mobile applications. You don't need to write two different applications. The code base is exactly the same, okay? This is how it works. So the portable class library contains the main object, like mobile service client, mobile service collection, and so forth. So the main objects, they live in this library. Then there is an extension libraries that contains, you know, the details for each platform. So if you are working with this Windows Store apps, you will see in the references sections two assemblies. One is the Microsoft Windows Azure.mobile.dll, and the other one is the Microsoft Windows Azure Mobile X.dll. Okay. For Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7.5, you have yet another library, which is called UI, because this contains specific interfaces, for example, for the authentication. We'll see when we talk about the authentication, when you authenticate against Microsoft, Facebook, and so forth, the classes that I use in that case are contained in this library. Okay? But the most important thing is that the mobile service client, which is the proxy object, if you are a WCF programmer, it's like the proxy object, okay? It lives in this, in this portable library. That means that you are expected to write exactly the same code for Windows Store apps and Windows Phone. So I give you some samples, and then we'll look at the code, the real code. So as I said, the mobile service is you can imagine as a sort of proxy that you can use, or client that you can use to connect to the old mobile services. So as you can see, you have to specify the public endpoint that you can retrieve from the management portal or using the cross-platform command line tool. And you have to specify the application key. Okay, so very straightforward. So and then you have to define this in the main page, XAML.cs for the Windows Store app. You have to specify a class for each of the entities that you have in your mobile service. So for example, in our sample, the to-do item has the text and complete properties. Of course, if you are extending the schema with other properties, it comes without saying that you have to create additional properties, of course. And the ID is always an integer, okay? Then you have, how can you access a specific table? You can just invoke the getTable method exposed by the mobile service client object, and you specify in the generic argument, you specify the type of the item. So in this case, the to-do item that models the entity. For example, the refresh to-do items in the quick start sample is a method which is invoked when the page starts, when the page is loaded. And as you can see, retrieving data from the mobile service is very straightforward, because once you have this table object, you can just specify filters at this level, like I want just to retrieve those items that are incomplete, which complete column is equal to false, and I want to turn this into a collection, because you can turn your you can retrieve results as an enumerable or as a collection in various ways. New HTTP message handlers. So how many of you are working with HTTP client? No, okay. So in the new version of the managed client, okay, so of the mobile service client, HTTP message handlers replace a previous mechanism called service filters. Okay, forget about that. Also because it's gone. So the mobile service client uses internally an instance of an object called HTTP client that is now available in the framework 4.5, okay, that can be used to send HTTP requests and receive HTTP responses. So in a managed client, I mean in a Windows Store app or Windows Phone 8 application, you can use HTTP message handlers to intercept and handle outgoing requests to mobile services. So if you are a WCF programmer, you can think at HTTP message handlers as message inspectors. Okay? Like you can use them to intercept a request that is going to your mobile service and to intercept also the response. Okay? So let me show you a sample which is much better, okay, than a ton of words. So first of all, as I promised you at the end of the previous hour, I'm showing you the code. No, I'm increasing the font, don't worry. Oh, nice. Now it's gone even this way. I mean, that's funny. Let me see. Try to. Okay, so now okay, so you are not expected to, you know, as I said, you're not expected to use HTTP client to talk to mobile services, but just I want to give you an idea how you can do this even without using the client, proxy provided by mobile services. So you create this object, you create a new URI, you have to create the headers, as we have seen on Fiddler. So I specify application JSON, I specify Zumo application and the application key. Then if I scroll down, you see I created a to-do item class, which is in this case WCF contract attributes, data contract, data member, and so forth. And here I'm using the data contract JSON serializer because I need to send a JSON object. Okay, so I'm basically using the memory stream to contain my object. So I use the serializer I created an instance of the to-do item, and I use the serializer to serialize this into JSON, and then I'm using the HTTP client to send the request to the mobile service. So here you can see I have a post async with the URI, and I create a new stream content, and I read the content from the stream reader. I encode this stuff in UTF-8, and I say this is in JSON format. Okay, so if I run this, let me show you this. If I go and I am using the so this is the HTML5 interface for the quick start. Now, if I go and start this application and I say go to launch and I click send, okay, if I come back and I refresh, you see I have my enter here. Okay, now let's look at the HTTP message handlers. So let's close this guy and let's go to this guy, Planco. This is exactly the same application, but this is the Windows Store app. Okay, now as we've seen on the slide, in the the very first thing you need to create is the mobile server. Let me increase the it's okay. Do you see the code? Okay. So the very first thing you need to create is the proxy, the mobile service client. Okay. First of all, as I said before, when talking about the portable library, you can see here there are two assemblies. One is mobile and the other one is mobile X. Okay. So mobile contains all the classes in common, like the mobile service client with the other platforms, while the X contains the extensions for this particular platform. Okay, after you created this mobile service, if we switch to the main page, as you can see, I create the to-do table. Usually, I would create the to-do table out of the mobile service, like, you know, in this line of code that was commented out. Why I commented out this? Because I want to create, I want to use HTTP message handlers. So in order to do that, I need to create another mobile application, mobile service client. So, and this is the syntax. I create a new mobile service client. I specify the application URI and application key. And then I specify an array of HTTP message handlers. Now, I create two just to the purpose to show you that you can create not one, but multiple ones. Like you can create multiple interceptors. So in this demo, I create the first one, the debug handler, to literally debug the request to debug, so to write down the body of outgoing requests to mobile services, and to write down on the debug console the text of the response messages. Let me show you this so it's much easier to understand if I show you the code. So if I go to the debug handler, as you can see, this class inherits from a delegating handler, which inherits from HTTP message handler. And one of the arguments is the HTTP request message. So I can just do the following thing. If the request is not null, and if the method is post, because if it's a get, of course, there is nothing in the body, I want to read the content as a string, and then I call debug write line. Then I invoke, with the base.send async, I'm invoking the next, you know, HTTP message handler. It's a pipeline, it's a chain of HTTP message handlers, okay? So The last one is indeed the one that is invoking the mobile service. It's the default one that makes the call, okay? So I'm invoking the next one in line, I wait, then I get the response and I write down the response, okay? The second one, the second message handler that I'm using is just to visualize that I'm invoking something. So I created, as you will see on the page, let me show you this. On the page, I just created a text block, this text block, and I want just to show a message saying invoking mobile service. Okay, so this is just an action, so it's a delegate, it's a function, where I say, I set the status of that text block, text box, to invoking mobile service when the status is busy. Otherwise, I set the string, the text to empty, and the same for visibility. I want this text block to be visible when the state is busy. And the busy handler is using an internal, in this case, variable outgoing count to count the outgoing, the number of outgoing requests. So when this value is equal to 1, this means that the client is busy. So I set the busy indicator to true, and this is going to set the text of the text block. When the call is complete, I decrement, you know, the number of ongoing calls, and if the count of ongoing calls is equal to 0, I set the busy indicator to false, and this is going to invoke my action that sets, you know, the text of my status to now. So this is the general effect. Let me show you. So if I go here and I say in the output, I clear all, I start this guy. You have seen here that was set invoking web service. It was very fast. Let me see if you can see if I insert something like go to Jupyter. You should see a message here. You see invoking mobile service. Now, if I switch back to the code, the other handler, message handler, the debug one, you see, when I read the messages at the beginning, here you have the JSON object with all the entries that were retrieved when invoking the read operation. And these are the requests and the response of the insert operation. Okay, so it's very easy. You can just use that to debug, and when you are done, you can not use the HTTP message handler. Okay, so it's a very convenient way. And it's reusable. So let's see the code very quickly. So this is the code we have just seen. This is the code of the debug handler. This is the code of the HTML5 client. So also in the HTML5 client, you have you have a JavaScript file called app.js. So in a very similar way, you create an object called mobile service client. Of course, you have to reference in the main page the script containing this object. And you can retrieve these from, this is automatically downloaded from your mobile service, as you can see. So you just need to enter the reference. And then the code is very similar. So you see to-do item table equal client get table, refresh to-do items, and so forth. So it's very, very similar. Let me show you the code for an HTML5 application. So if you go and open website, I need to do this way. So if I open a website, let's take this one. This is the default one that you can download from the portal for the tutorial. So as you can see, this is the HTML page. At the end, you have a reference to the script, and also a reference to the app.js that contains the logic for the page. So if you go here, you see that the code is similar to the one, to the managed code for the Windows Store app. So there is a mobile service client, and you can get access to the to-do item table invoking the client.getTable method, okay? And of course, the refresh to-do items is, it's a little different in the sense that the way to invoke and retrieve data is exactly the same. Of course, the way to visualize this data is different because it's just using jQuery, okay? So it's, of course, it's different. We'll see also the authentication stuff for HTML5. Authentication. I propose we make a short break now. You come back at in 10 minutes, and we make authentication. Okay, so because I don't want to shrink authentication, because we are give or take at the mid of the presentation. So let's do that. Okay.